Welcome to the Lunch Break ABCs, round number two. I'm Brandon Eastman. You're joined today by myself, Christine Smith, Ben Albert, Andrew Beardat, and we're going to be diving into the topic of business bravery and the concept of balance in your business. These are very far-reaching subjects. This is episode two. The first episode, we talked about how to authentically amplify your brand. It turned into a really cool conversation, so be sure to go check that one out after this conversation. But we're back with you today to talk about bravery, and we're going to kick it off with bravery. Now, bravery in your business can mean many different things, and Christine recently had a thought, and she said, well, isn't courage very synonymous with the idea of bravery? So Christine, I loved that idea, and it would be only fitting for you to kick this off for us.
Of course. So when I thought about this, it was thinking about, the risks that we take as business owners, right? And I think it takes a certain type of person to do that. You have to have the courage to want to be like, okay, if this fails, like, that's okay, right? It's not the end of the world. It might be at that time. But, and I think that's a very brave thing for someone to do, because not everybody does it, right? There's a lot of us that out there that have built businesses and that they failed, or maybe they were successful and you built another one and that one was successful and then some weren't. To continue beating ourselves up all the time takes a lot of effort. And I think even being able to rise above, right? So some of us have taught ourselves how to, no more negative self-talk, or to get out of our own heads, get out of our own way. You know, that's how you get to that next level. And I think that takes a lot of courage to do that. It's hard to show the underbelly of being a business owner, but sometimes you have to, in order to be like, all right, what is it that's missing or wrong that I need to fix, adjust, go into a different direction, because what I'm doing right now isn't working. And I think, that takes a lot of courage. That takes a lot of self-awareness to get to that point, rather than just being, okay, well, so-and-so is the reason it's not working, or it's everybody else's problem. You're acknowledging that it's something that you have to manage. It's a very unique situation too for a business owner to, have the cojones to be like, okay, we're going to do this.
When did you know, though? And I think this is something that we can riff off of, because I accidentally started a business. Like, I didn't go into this thinking I'm going to create a business that does this, this, and this. But when did you know, Christine, I am an entrepreneur. I am a business owner. I've got that DNA. I've got those skills.
I mean, I would argue that a lot of business owners go into business and don't intend to. Like, it just kind of happens, because it's a passion, right? I personally have had the entrepreneurial spirit since I was little. I have specific memories of being like, I'm going to have my own dog sitting business and I'm going to make this much money and it's going to be great. I can build my own hours. Like, I've always been that way. It's kind of strange. Like, that was a thought I had in elementary school. But nothing really ever came to fruition until, much later, right? Being able to actually take that leap, to take it to that next level. Cause I think a lot of people think about things like that, but they don't take an action. And I think in order for action to happen, it takes courage to do that, right? Because you're like, okay, I got half the people telling me I'm crazy, and I got the other half of people saying I'm going to fail. And there's only two people that actually believe in me, but I'm going to take the people that believe in me, or I'm just going to take 100% the belief in myself, and I'm just going to go do it. And then if I fall on my face, like, at least I tried, no one else can take that away from me.
How about you, Ben? When did you discover that the business owner was who you were? But also, how did you push past that initial, because I'm sure you've had it too, correct me if I'm wrong, but that initial fear of launching the business, launching the idea?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more with what Christina said. Anyone on the live stream, I know people listen to the audio as well. Anyone on the live stream, I've got this goofy wig on in honor of Halloween. And honestly, I'm not the class clown. I'm actually, the other day someone told me I didn't smile enough. It actually offended me a little bit. I'm not the goofball class clown. So putting on a big fancy wig, is a micro bravery. It's a micro fear that I'm going to be judged and look bad. And I didn't see myself as an entrepreneur. It's always been in my blood. For example, I'd always just kind of get in trouble because we'd had one way of doing. We had great playbooks at my workplaces, but I'd still be bringing in new ideas. And oftentimes that, if anything, my bravery was suppressed because I'd bring these new ideas and was told that, no, we don't do that around here. So I had the entrepreneurial spirit, but I didn't really have the courage or bravery to be an entrepreneur most of my life. One thing I've been saying a lot lately is confidence comes with memories of winning. And I think that goes almost any massive thing, any statement. Bravery comes from memories of confidence. So if confidence comes from memories of winning and bravery comes from confidence, how do we get these micro wins? So forming an LLC was bravery for me. It was difficult for me. I didn't know what I was doing, but I formed the LLC, and really it was just a few $100 investment. It was a micro win. And then reaching out to strangers on LinkedIn took bravery. It took courage, but it was another micro win. And when you start networking with people, great people like the three of you guys in this room as well, you start getting more and more wins because you meet a great person, then they introduce you to two, you meet two more people, and you start stacking these wins. You start becoming more confident. You start becoming more brave. And the quiet kid who's not a class clown ends up putting on a wig on a live stream because you need to kind of put yourself in a weird environment and have these micro brave actions to reach to a point where you can be successful in business or just in your homestead as well. Being brave and showing bravery around your family is a leadership role you get to play every day in your life.
Are you sure that's not your real hair?
I wish it was my real hair.
Oh, man, I would love that. I would love it. It's talking about your point on being a class clown, right? I feel like I'm the opposite camp. I feel like I was always cracking jokes and getting in a little bit of trouble. And for me, you know, bravery is an interesting topic, especially in the realm of entrepreneurship, because I have this like compulsive need to be different. And I always want to go the opposite direction. When most people are going to go this way, I want to go the opposite way. That's just whether it's my nature or just my upbringing or what, that's what I prefer. And so for me, I started realizing I had more of an entrepreneurial spirit when I was in my second career. So I started off in sales, moved to personal training, and worked in my brother's business for 8 years. Loved it. It was a blast. Learned so much about people, about the human body, about the way that we function, not just on a physical level, but on a mental, emotional level. And the longer I was in the business, the more bored I got with kind of the bread and butter of the business, right? Just talking about food, talking about exercise, nutrition, how to do all that stuff. And I started getting more interested in business. I started getting more interested in, okay, well, how are we going to market this? Or how, okay, so we're going to hold the seminar. How are we going to get people in? Okay, nobody showed up to the seminar. Why? Let's diagnose that. And then doing a lot of these intrapreneurial opportunities within that business. I wrote a book, actually ended up writing two books, created coursework, did a whole bunch of other stuff, right? Created these kind of different divisions almost within the business that were money-making opportunities. And so I was like, okay, there's definitely something here that I enjoy, but I knew long term that fitness was my brother's dream. That was my brother's passion. That's what he loved and he enjoyed. And I like it. I don't know that I love it to the extent that he does, right? And that told me a lot was, okay, this is something that I want to do for myself and I like doing it with and for other people, but to build my entire career off of that one rock, I kind of knew that I need to do a little bit more. I need to do some more personal exploring. And that's really where I'm at with entrepreneurship. I'm using entrepreneurship as my opportunity to learn, to grow, to test things out. I started off trying to do some business type coaching and work with different businesses centered around productivity and habit change and that type of stuff. And I found that habit change was one that was really more interesting for me, and particularly working with groups of people was more exciting. I don't mind doing one-on-one stuff, but I come alive in a group setting, right? Where we're here, the four of us, like this got me fired up. So for me, entrepreneurship is exploration. And to tie that kind of back to bravery, you know, I think Ben kind of hit it on the head where those micro bravery moments are really what sets apart successful entrepreneurs from those that are unsuccessful. Is you do those micro brave things. You reach out to that one contact and then you do it again and you do it again and you do it again. And then you string a bunch of those micro brave moments together. And then other people look at you and they say, wow, you are so brave.
Yeah. Yeah. The bravery to explore new opportunities. Just like you're doing, from moving from the chamber to being an author coach with the self-publishing school, just like Ben did when months ago he messaged me and said, hey, I'm working on this new package that I'm offering to people to get them exposure on shows. Just like Christine did when she started Hangar Co-Works, on top of Ripple Effects, on top of everything else that she does, and on top of everything else that you guys all do. So what we're doing is constantly changing. And there's always that moment of when the change occurs where we must summon that bravery. And I love that quote that you said, Ben, of confidence comes from memories of winning. And it's very true. I mean, if you're feeling down, just think back to what are moments of my life where I did feel confident? What was I doing at that time? What was I doing with my body? What was I thinking about? How was I breathing, right? You can mimic that emotional state to bring it back whenever you need to. But like you, Andrew, I had that entrepreneurial spirit from a young age too, when I was walking around my development at the time, my neighborhood, with my book of Pokemon cards that I didn't want anymore. And I literally knocked. I had no fear because I was young. I knocked on every single door by door. And I probably knocked on about 40 doors that afternoon. And no one was interested except the very, very last door. And it was the person who owned most of the property in the development. So I probably should have knocked on their door first, looking back. But she was like, oh, this is so sweet of you to sell your Pokemon cards. She's like, how much do you want for them? And I was a little baller, apparently, because I remember saying, I want $250 for these cards. And she was like, whoa, I didn't expect that much money. I thought you were going to say like $5, but there's like a Charizard in there. And there was a lot of other stuff too. Who knows if they would have been worth money. But she didn't buy them that day. And she said, well, I'm going to talk to my husband and see if this is something that he wants. And she's like probably in her 60s at this point. She probably doesn't even know what Pokemon is. So I went back every single day for a week and knocked on her door again. And she never told me no. So I kept going back. And eventually her husband was home. I still remember his name's Mr. Vittengill. And he was like, what's he selling, honey? And she's like, he's selling Pokemon cards. And he came to the door and he gave me the $250 for the cards right there on the spot. And from that moment, I was like, wow, this was really cool. And it led me into sales, and it led me into 100% commission environments where I wasn't an entrepreneur essentially because I was working for a company, but it's really the same thing.
Same right? thing. You have to feed yourself, right? Exactly. You got to go out and knock on doors over and over and over again before you get the sale.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I started doing that. I rose up within that company. And then, like I mentioned before, the business kind of started on accident. I wanted to write a book. I wanted to get it in front of people. It started as an ebook. And then I was like, well, this is already really long for an ebook, so I'm going to make it into a book. But then came the point, like you said, Ben, it was time to sign the LLC and create a business. And I was like, wow, I never anticipated on going down this path here. But that's the path that I went, and it's changed constantly. And there's been so many points, especially when I first started creating content, where I was so afraid to hit post. I was so afraid to publish it because it was video. They'd be able to see me. I was doing this in the corporate world, but my friends, family, you know, new clients in the future, like they had no idea who I was. So it was a moment of fear. And I remember pushing publish on that first piece of video content that I ever made in my living room, with like all the family pictures behind us, a flip chart and a really bad quality camera. And from there, it's led to this. So you really can't begin to grow, and you really can't begin to evolve until you take that first step. And if you're not quite sure if that first step is the right first step, you don't know if it's the right one until you take it, right? So you need to take it, and then you have the opportunity from there to constantly evolve. At that point,
amen. Mic drop.
tiny little tangent. The being a commission only sales rep, being an intrapreneur, like an entrepreneur within a structure, I actually think that entrepreneurship's a little over glorified, and there's massive value and not having to be so brave that you're building something from scratch. If you can find a company that'll give you autonomy, a playbook, and a system where you can make ends meet without taking on all the risk. So a micro bravery, maybe not quite as brave. I mean, we're talking bravery, but I still think it's pretty darn brave to be working on commission only. I think that working as an intrapreneur in a system is just as brave and just as difficult as being an entrepreneur. And I think entrepreneurship's almost a little over glorified. For a lot of people, it's really just finding even the bravery of just leaving the wrong company to a better company can be a good move. We're all entrepreneurs here, but if the listener is not an entrepreneur, I don't want them to think that they have to become one. There's so many different ways you can utilize bravery in your business life, whether it's an intrapreneur, whether it's asking for the job promotion, whether it's moving to a new one. So we're all entrepreneurs here. A lot of our listeners are, but you don't have to be. To kick ass and be the bravest person you are.
Yeah.
Do you guys do anything specifically each day in order to help yourself summon that bravery, in order to step into it? Like when you do have that moment where you're about to make a big decision and you feel that fear, right? You feel that hesitation. What do you personally do to move past that and move through it?
Well, I think at this point for a lot of us, we do it a lot more, right? At first, it was a challenge to do it because you're like, oh, this is really hard. This is really uncomfortable. But now that we're used to doing it, I know for me, it's like, well, I just got to do it because being uncomfortable means I'm going to the next level, right? And it's like such a small blip of feeling now that I'm like, okay, what's the next thing? When do I go to the next, you know, that next step or that next level, or, you know, build whatever that next business is? Or I think it's, you know, just for me, it's like repetition, right? Like you get better at it the more that you do it. And all of these things, you know, exhibiting small bits of bravery, like Ben was saying, I think goes back to the whole habit, right? Like Andrew kind of touched on earlier. It's a habit, right? Like you can't be more brave unless you start doing it, right? Like you just have to start and do some little thing. It could just be wearing a wig on a podcast to get you started. Make sure you're like, I wouldn't normally do this, but okay, we'll do it and see what happens. The world didn't collapse. Okay, great. Now you can try something else that might be a little bit more bold. And then you work your way up. And you know, the next thing is you're writing a book or you're, you know, launching a podcast or you're, you know, launching a side business while you're still in the corporate world or still working for someone else. And you never know where it's going to take you at that point.
For sure. For me, you know, what really has come to the forefront for me was I started interviewing for the job that Brandon mentioned. I work now, soon will work at self-publishing school. And that job came up because of networking, which is fascinating. I had somebody on my show, and I like to help people out that are on my show. And so I was just trying to connect people with an open job opportunity. And I read about the job opportunity, and I'm like, oh, that sounds pretty cool. I'm actually going to apply for that. So, you know, the interview process for me was the most challenging in the sense of the longest. It was 5 interviews that I went through. And I've never been so calm in an interview process. And so for me, you know, you'd say it was, you know, business. I just went in confident. But for me, I came in with faith. I for me, God's a big part of my life. And I believe that there's something bigger out there. And so for me, it was, I'm just going to trust that whatever happens is what needs to happen. If I'm going to get this job, then I'm going to perform well and I'm going to get this job. If I'm not meant to have this job, it's not going to come through. I'm going to goof on something or somebody else is going to perform better. And that's going to be that. And I won't get the job. And so going in with that level of faith and confidence allowed me to perform really well because I wasn't nervous. I could just be myself. I could just show up as is. I can answer hard questions without feeling like I was fumbling, trying to impress. Because I don't know, I didn't go in feeling like I needed to impress. I went in trying to be me. And if the me that I presented, if the me that came across was the right person for the job, then that's the person that they needed. And they claim there was 183 other applications, which I think is pretty wild. Wow. But I ended up being the top candidate, accepted the role, and here we are. But I think a lot of that came down to I trusted that whatever was going to happen was what was supposed to happen.
Congrats. That's a lot of applicants.
Yeah.
Yeah, seriously.
I mean, obviously you killed the interview, so.
Yeah.
Interviews.
Yeah.
He probably wore that exact suit right there.
Actually, I don't even know if I did. I wore collared shirts most of the time, but that's just my regular business attire. But soon, yeah, my business attire is going to be like that. I'm going to be wearing t-shirts.
Nice.
There we go.
Hashtag work from home, baby.
Yeah, you know, when it comes to making those tough decisions, again, it's a muscle that you just get better at over time. But Ben, you recently posted on your Facebook. You've been doing this every day, which is super cool. What is this daily thing you're doing? What are you calling it? It's like, what is it? You tell me.
30 days of floss.
Mm.
I came up with it myself, but I just wrote Red Pink Goldfish. I'm going to butcher the second author, but the first author is Stan Phelps. Stan's going to be on my podcast. So I'm reading a book he co-authored called Pink Goldfish. And I'm not going to go through all of Pink Goldfish. It was a credible book, but they go through an acronym, FLOSSUM. And the acronym means something, but it's FLOSSUM. And it's all about how our flaws, what make us awesome. It's what make us different. It's what makes us differentiate ourselves. And a lot of my flaws are, in a weird way, humble bragging, because I'm a little afraid. I don't have the bravery to talk about the real bad flaws. I don't know if anyone wants to hear it or not. But I'm doing 30 days of flaws to kind of work that bravery muscle and post a flaw a day, whether it's struggling with public speaking, whether it's imposter syndrome, whether it's over-preparing. Well, these are flaws I have that you kind of find that a lot of people have similar flaws as you. So, yeah, it's hashtag 30 days of flaws. And I'm already losing enjoyment in it, but that's part of the fun part. Yeah. I committed to 30 days, so I'm going to do all 30 days, and the flaws are going to get worse and worse as we go.
Oh, that's exciting then. Oh, boy. Can't wait for day 30.
But Pink Goldfish was a great book, and it's all about, it's more for the marketer, but it's really about how you can take your flaws, like you're cheap, flaunt it. You're expensive, flaunt it. I'll do a random example. Planet Fitness is not for people that are fit, like fit, CrossFit fit, smashing weights. It's for people that want to be accepted. But they're flaunting the fact that being fit is actually like a negative thing. I know that's kind of a trigger warning thing, but if you're ripped, and part of slamming a weight is the fact you did one extra rep and then you have to drop it. Mm. If you're slamming weights, they'll ask you to leave. And that's part of their marketing, because they don't want to be the CrossFit, and CrossFit doesn't want to be the Planet Fitness. So why pretend to be something you're not? Actually flaunt it, because that's what makes you flossome.
Wow. Well said. Yeah, 100%. I brought it up because you posted the other day that one of the flaws of yours is skepticism. And you said, I'm one of the most skeptical people I know. And I related to that. And I read recently from someone that as a business owner, being skeptical is the least thing that you want to be. And I was like, ooh, that's not a good thing. And it was someone I looked up to, and I was like, I'm very skeptical. But I am probably skeptical to a fault at times, where, you know, there is a good opportunity, but because it's really sketchy seeming, or it doesn't fit the boxes, or maybe I don't believe in myself fully, I don't take the person up on it. Like, I got an email the other day of a speaking opportunity, which I'm going to be talking to you and Brian about, Christine, because I think it fits into what we're doing very well. But it's a speaking opportunity, and it didn't seem real. But then I got another email from the person. They requested me on LinkedIn, and then they called me and left a voicemail. And I did all the research, and they're a legit company for continuing education credits. And I'm just thinking to myself, I almost missed an opportunity to speak because of my own skepticism. And even if you are someone listening who is skeptical, it can be more difficult to make these decisions where bravery is required. But what I found helps me as a skeptical human being is make the decision and focus on what you can actually control. Like, I know if I launch a new product or a new program or whatever it is, I know that I can't control the outcome. The only thing that I can control is launching it, putting in the activity to make it as awesome as possible, testing, see what's working, what's not working, and changing things when I can. But I've also found that outside of business, that maybe this goes into the balance category, I don't know, we're going to get there. But outside of business, I found that focusing on other things that I can control has helped me in business. Like when it comes to working out, like we're talking about, I know that when I'm going to the gym 3 days a week and walking every single day too, to get at least 6,000 to 10,000 steps, I am much more brave in my business when I'm focusing on what I can control with my physical body. The same thing goes with when I'm spending ample time with my wife and making sure that she gets the quality time that she wants and that I want. I know that I'm more present and more effective and more powerful in my business. So if you're someone where you're feeling not as brave when it comes to making a business decision, or when you're thinking about starting the business or doing something new, even if it's a career with a company, focus on what you can control away from your business, because that will make you stronger when you're actually making those business decisions themselves.
One of the things that we've brought up a couple times with bravery has been showing up as you are, showing up as yourself. I think Ben and I both talked about that. And I think maybe that'd be a good kind of piece to end with on the bravery segment. So I guess for you, Christine, when you hear showing up as yourself and being brave and that genre, that vein of things, what comes to your mind?
Being unapologetic about what it is you're doing.
So how do you do that? How do you be unapologetic?
You dye your hair purple.
That's right. That is right. Well, that's such a good point, right? My little sister did that, literally that exact same thing. She dyed her hair purple. I thought I was just, it's like a phase or whatever. Cool, right? Purple hair. And then I proposed to my wife and we're getting ready to get married and she's going to stand at the wedding. And like, I'm like, hey, can you just tone down the purple like just a little bit, just so it's not as purple when we look back in 30 years. And she had like a breakdown, right? It came out of nowhere. I'm like, whoa, it's just hair. Right. But like to her, like it was identity, right? It was very different. And so that to me, my wife later was like, you're an idiot. Why did you say that?
But the thing is like, it seems like such a simple thing to people, but people do certain things because of that little bravery piece. Like, okay, when I was getting divorced, like usually women always do some drastic hair thing. And I just kind of went the other direction. I was like, I'll do unicorn hair first. And then I gradually went into the purple. And it literally became like a part of my identity. Like I was known as like that person with purple. I know it's not purple right this second, but a couple weeks. But it just became a part of it. And then it almost allowed me to be more of myself around people, because it's like the purple hair gave me like permission, I guess, to do that. And I had people like you told your sister to tone it down. I've had that my entire life. I've had people who are like, just tone it down. You laugh too loud. Like you're too loud. Take it down a notch. And I'm like, purple isn't down a notch, right? Like, no, I'm going to go the other way. I'm just going to bring it up a couple notches. If you don't like it, you can leave. You can close your eyes.
Well, I love that. I did the same thing. So when I was in college, went through a phase where I'm like, well, I don't really feel like paying for a haircut. Let's see what my roommate can do. And so I got a mohawk and I loved it. I absolutely loved my mohawk. I had a couple of different ones throughout the years. And like, I'm considering bringing it back because it was just so much fun. And you just show up as you are. And here's what I like. Whenever you have something that's a little bit out there, for me, it's like a litmus test, right? Is I'm putting myself out there. And now when people come to interact with me, I get to learn something about them right away. Mm. Are they going to comment on my hair? Are they going to say something rude? Are they insensitive? Mm. Or are they going to say something complimentary? Or are they not even going to notice? Do they just not even care? For me personally, I love the people that just don't even care. They just don't even notice and they just interact with you like regular. So for me, I almost like it because it's, when you're being brave in that sense and you're stepping out, it allows you to learn a lot about the people that are around you, for good and for worse.
Can we start using the mohawk version of you for the thumbnail for these shows?
We might need to.
I want to see it. I need to see it.
I'll see if I can post a picture about it. We're due for a LinkedIn.
That'd be a great post too.
Yeah,
that'd be a great post about the bravery going into it and what you just said. Like, how do people react when they see this? What kind of person are they? Like, what will they say? You can definitely tell a lot about a person based on what they say about the decisions and choices that you make. I remember I was recently with you, Christine. And if this person's watching, I apologize. I still appreciate you and respect you. It was just an interesting comment. But speaking on balance, okay, I still work inside of a sales company. I've been with that sales company for over a decade now. I have a book of business that I've built up, and I work with that company 4 days a week, right? While building my business, while doing the podcast, while working with other clients, with Team Elevate and everything else that we do. And someone heard that I'm still working inside of a company, and they said, oh, so your business isn't successful yet. Or they said, you're not busy enough yet. Right. And this took me off guard. Christine, you probably saw me get taken off guard with this because I did not expect it. It was late too, so I was just tired. But I was like, wow. And it really made me critically look at myself, like, am I doing something wrong? Right. And I know there's a lot of other people out there who are listening right now who are either with a job and they want to start their business, or they're working a job while running their business and they're thinking to themselves, Am I not successful yet because I'm still working a job while building my business? And the answer is that is not the case whatsoever. That's other people's opinion of you. They don't see everything else that's happening. They don't see why you're working that job. Maybe you're working that job because it has complementary skills that are helping you in your business, right? Like, my job of sales is making me a better salesperson so I can go and teach salespeople as someone who is still doing this and is in the world of sales, not just somebody who did this at one point and now is showing you how to do it based on my track record 10 years ago. So if you're working a job and building a business, it's not easy, but it might be necessary for you at this time to bring in that income that you know you're going to get while building the business that allows you to do the advertisements, that allows you to get the brand and the marketing, and maybe it allows you to hire your first person. But I think we're all in a different position. But I know, like, as an example, Christine, you've got so many different things that you do. And I think that we could talk about balance itself for like 14 Ever. Hours, especially with the four of us. So with everything that all of you guys do, I want to hear, like, how do you balance everything that you do? Because several of you are parents, right? Ben, are you a parent yet, Ben? I'm not a parent yet. Okay, so we have that in common. But Andrew and Christine, you are parents. Like, how do you even balance a business with parenthood, but also with a job? Like, Christine, I'll let you take this because I've mentioned you a few times, but like, how do you think of balance in your business?
So, I mean, I guess to piggyback on what that person said to you, I probably would have been shocked as well. I don't remember actually hearing that person say that to you, but there's no wrong way to own a business, right? And I think there's a very old school mentality of, well, if you own a business, you can only have one and you should only be just focusing on that, right? And I've never been that type of person. Like, I always want more. And I'm like, how does this feed into this and feed into that? And how do I make money in every way possible? Right. I think, you know, figuring out the balance kind of comes with time. Like, there are some days that I'm like, what am I doing with my life? And there's some days I'm like, I got it all figured out, right? That's Monday to Friday every week. And then you throw a kid in, a spouse in, you know, I have an investment property and dealing with tenants and just managing my own house. And it's different for me than it would be for Andrew as well. Just like, you know, I'm a chick and you guys aren't. So like, there's that difference. How people see me and how people interact with me is very different. Like, I've definitely had people who have looked at me like, oh, you're the working mom, so you must not spend a lot of time with your kid. And that hurts when people say stuff like that, right? It's like, no, that's not the case at all. Like, my daughter was here when we were building Hanger. She was here putting things together with my partners, right? Like, I wanted her to see and interact and be a part of that process. And even like at, you know, anytime I've had calls at home, and if she happens to, you know, she's in school now, so I don't see her as much, but she's in school, right? Like, I get to do a lot more during the day because she's not there. And the times that she was, well, I guess she's on a call, right? And it's a good litmus test to see, like, if somebody has a problem with it, I'm like, all right, well, she's part of my life. Like, she's not going away. So, but, you know, she's going to be incorporated into how I do business. She, you know, she's here all the time. Whether I'm doing stuff for Flight Creative that day or Ripple or Hangar or, you know, Team Elevate, sometimes she's on her calls or, you know, she's doing her little thing and I'm meeting with a client because that's just how it has to be that day. I don't think there's a wrong way to do anything. And balance for me is, it's just like this constant ride, right? Like, it's not, oh, hey, I'm spending time equally in all these areas. That's not what balance is. It's being able to kind of spend the time that you can, because not everything needs the same amount of time. Like, I would rather put more time into my family than my business, but it depends on the week, right? Like, sometimes my family doesn't need me that week, right? My kid's in school. She doesn't need me as much during the day. Okay, great. So I can focus on some of these other things. And like you, Brandon, you know, I have other jobs too. Like, I have other means of income, and it's not because like, oh, I need it. It's, well, I want it. Mm-hmm. I like where it has taken me, and I like that it gives me the ability to do other things, you know, take more risk or buy another investment property or invest in another business. I have that opportunity because of the fact that I have these other opportunities that are constantly feeding, you know, feeding my business, my personal life. And they all feed into each other. I've built businesses that they operate in such a way that there's a lot of overlap. So I'm not a dentist over here and then I'm running a bowling alley. Like, I feel like those are very, you know, different things, and it would be very hard to kind of manage. But literally having like the co-working space, everything is managed under one roof. A lot of things overlap. You know, we do events and things like that. And I think that's really helpful. And if for anyone out there who has multiple businesses, I think the smartest thing to do is to have some overlap, right? You're building this next business because, you know, for whatever reason, but like, other success can help build more success over time.
Yeah, I love this. All the success in these different categories, you're on the same mission. You have the same vision. They all work in unison with each other. I know personally, I don't even know if I like the word balance. I know it's necessary to stand up on a balance beam, but I don't know how to figure out if I'm balanced or not. What I care more about is integration, integrating different things in my life. Brandon, you're a great example with what you just shared. I already said this before. I think entrepreneurship's over glorified, and the concept that you need to throw out everything, go all in on a business, like you were just saying, Christine, there's narrative that you have to go in all in on one idea, have that be your one source of income. And if it's not, you're failing or you haven't made it yet. No, living an integrated life is working on a, you already have a book of business with a great skill set, and you're getting better at what you're doing every single day, and it makes you better at what you're doing in your entrepreneurial endeavor. That's called integration. And you don't have to figure out balance 50 here, 50 here. As long as your decisions, I'm talking about Brandon right now because he's a great exemplar for what I'm talking about, but the podcast, the training, and your current sales role that you're working 4 days a week is all integrated into being a better person. So it's almost like balance isn't even a necessary conversation. Is, am I integrated and in alignment with where I'm trying to go? And then it's kind of just like, you know, we're all going to have our own way of balancing act all these different endeavors. Andrew and I met him, Andre Young, spoke at the Growth Now. I don't know if you were going to bring this up, but he spoke at the Growth Now movement, and he says work-life harmony.
Harmony.
Yeah, I was just going to say harmony. Yeah.
So you guys got it. I've heard work-life blend, anything almost but balance, because balance creates this teeter-totter metaphor, right, that you're either in balance or not. If I want to live a life of integration, I need to be looking at work-life harmony and ensuring that I have harmony and fulfillment in each of my tasks, so my home life doesn't ruin my business life doesn't ruin my home life. Everything I do is integrated in the harmony of what I'm looking to accomplish, acknowledging that I might have to make sacrifices. That's another big misconception. People think that everything's going to come easy and you just need to do what you're passionate about and you'll find your purpose and you're off to the moon. No, you're going to have to do crap that you don't enjoy. You're going to have to do crap that feels out of balance with the harmony you're trying to create. But you have to have that awareness that doing this busy book work or taking on expense or risk or being brave might feel uncomfortable. But if it's in harmony with what you're trying to achieve, there's no balance sheet. My balance sheet, I'm on a total tangent. This is how my brain works. My balance sheet sucks right now, but I also just invested a lot of money in training and tools that are going to get me to the next level. So my balance sheet looks like I'm screwing up, but I realize that I'm in harmony with what I'm going to accomplish by buying this training and investing in myself. So the balance sheet doesn't look good. I look out of balance, but I know inside that this is exactly what I need to do. It's really hard to define.
I mean,
well, I think, oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Andrew.
I was going to say, you brought up the idea of investing. And I think that's powerful because we look at money, right, as a thing where if you get enough of it away, it can start making more of itself, right? And you look at our relationships, you look at our work, we invest things in them. We invest money, we invest time, we invest effort, we invest emotion. And those investments sometimes are at different phases, right? I like a look at my family. And I know that if I'm not regularly, consistently investing in my family, there are going to be problems. I've seen where if I'm not present as much, if I'm not as focused with especially my oldest daughter who's 4, if I'm not spending focused time with her, she's just more upset. She just has more problems. She just struggles more. She needs that attention. And so if I'm not regularly investing in her, investing that time, then there is a price to pay, right? There is a cost down the road. And I think with everything that we're doing, there's different times of intense investment and there's different levels of investment that we need to go through. If you have a family member that's in crisis, that is going to take a lot of your investment. You're going to have to put a lot of your chips into that pile. And if you're starting a brand new business venture, you're going to want to put a lot of your focus in there, possibly to the detriment of some of your relationships in the short term. The key is, what are you doing long term, right? Medium term, because short term things go up and down, things change. And you just got to be careful that you don't continue to make investing type sacrifices in the short term that turn into medium term sacrifices and then long term sacrifices, because there is a price to pay for those people that do go all in on the business, right? Become that business workaholic. I've seen a lot of people get divorced, but also have very successful businesses, right? And there's a price to pay, right? You can have that successful business. And I believe it's possible to have that successful business and not get divorced, right? It may take you a year or two longer. It may be a little bit longer, but really at the end of the day, who cares, right? You're only running your own race. We're all doing just our own work. We're all doing our own thing. And if you get to retirement 1 year earlier, or you get to that $1 million mark 1 year earlier, it doesn't really matter, right? So I think understanding what really matters for each of us is what's going to be critical for finding that quote balance, right? And if you're very fully aware of what's important to you, it becomes very easy to know what to say yes and what to say no to. I remember when I was younger and single, I would look at a lot of the married people or the people with kids, and they weren't very fun. They didn't want to go out. They didn't want to go do stuff, right? And I'm like, oh, come on, you know. And occasionally there was they would come out, and there would be a huge deal for them. It's like, oh man, I'm out for the month. This is my time, you know what I mean? I'm like, man, that's so sad, you know. But now I'm in that spot, and I get it, and I really get it, because I have to be very purposeful with the way that I invest my time and I invest my attention. And yeah, having a boys' night or something, like, I'm trying to plan like next year's fantasy football draft to make sure that like we're all going to be lined up so that we can do it, right? Because we want to do like a little weekend event, right? But because it's 12 guys coming together and we all have families, many of us have kids, and it's a lot to try and get scheduled. And so I think the investing analogy right there, Ben, was perfect.
And I think what you said, Andrew, about the intentionality of things, I think is something that's extremely important. When it comes to finding harmony, like, you have to have intention. most people, and I say most people in the kindest way possible, because I don't think we do it on purpose, but it's just not something that we've learned. We don't learn how to intentionalize the things we're doing. And I'm talking across the board, like, you know, how you prep meals through the week, or think about, like, it's an ongoing agony of like, what are we having for dinner, right? Okay, well, if that's a constant problem, well, how do you solve it so it's not a problem anymore, right? And release that brain power so you can move it to something else, because any problems are going to cause a fog in your brain, right? And are going to prevent you from doing other things. So being more intentional about the things that you're doing, whether it's building a business or businesses, you know, actually taking the leap of not working for somebody else anymore. Okay, well, what does that look like when you do that, right? Do you have enough money saved up? Okay, what does it look like in the next 6 months in your business? How is your family going to react to any of these sacrifices? Do you even have to make those sacrifices, or can they be tweaked? So, you know, everybody stays happy and you're not having to, you know, sacrifice your spouse or your kids for this pipe dream that may not actually happen because you don't actually have a plan, right? And I know what Ben was saying earlier that I wanted to comment on is a lot of this reminds me of like the Marie Kondo way of cleaning, right? If it doesn't make you happy, get rid of it. Well, the same thing applies to everything else.
Spark joy. Yeah.
Yeah. Does it spark joy? Is the end result going to lead to ultimate happiness? Right. And I think that is what we are all doing to a degree, right? Whether it's intentional or not. But the reason why we become business owners, or the reason why we want to open up a business or two, or we get married, we have kids, is because we're trying to continue to build that level of happiness, right? And I built a business because I want my own time. I want to be able to spend time with my family. Were all those things actually happening, right? And if they're not, okay, well, have you made adjustments accordingly so that those things can progress in that direction? And making slight adjustments, I think, is important, because, you know, making a drastic adjustment, you may have gone too far. Like, okay, don't go the other way. We don't want to have like a complete, you know, reaction to something that was unnecessary. But, you know, having that mentality of, okay, is this actually going to make me happy? Let's look at, okay, 30 days, 120, you know, 365, okay, 3 years down the road, is this going to put me on that path? And I don't think the intentional mind track is there for a lot of people, thinking like, well, I just want to be a millionaire. But why? Mm-hmm. Why do you want that? For financial security, so you can take your family on vacation, so you can put your kids in college because your parents couldn't do that for you? Like, what is the reason that you're taking all of these steps and taking the time? Is it actually going to get you to the purpose that you originally had envisioned?
Yeah, that looking ahead is so important. And even to your point and Andrew's point, looking ahead 3 years and asking yourself, what do I want my day-to-day life to look like in 3 years? You can't pinpoint exactly what you're going to be doing, because things will happen that you don't expect, right? But again, focusing on the controllable, if you could have the ideal outcome for your life, your ideal lifestyle, the house that you're living in, the car that you're driving, the business that you're operating, how you're running the business, are you running it from home, you know, working for self-publishing school now where you get to work from home? Are you still driving to a place of business? Like, what do you want your life physically and your day-to-day activities to look like 3 years from now? And I've been putting a lot of thought into this, because we just talked about, I still work for a company and I drive, it's 50-minute round trip to and back from this company 4 times a week, which I like right now. I love what I do, and that fits into my schedule. But we recently found out, and I've already told all our, you know, our families and everything, so I can release it for the first time on the podcast, I have a baby on the way. So
congrats.
Thank you very much. Oh my goodness, here we are 50 minutes in. Holy smoke, we should have done a whole show on this.
Listen, she's putting a lot more work into it than I am, or than I did. So again, thanks for the congrats. But like, I've been
Why did we choose balance and bravery when we could have chose babies?
Baby, that would have been a perfect topic.
So it's made me a lot more intentional about what I want my life to look like now that I have a baby on the way. Do I want to be driving 4 days a week, or do I want to make this my full-time business? Is this now the time to go all in on this one avenue, this one aspect? So the point I'm making is your life will change. Therefore, your goals and what you want your lifestyle to look like, it will also change. The one place that I know I definitely don't ever want to be, and I've run into this many times, is coming from a place in my business of disparity, right? If I don't have this full-time income and now I have to earn income with the business and it has to be at a certain target each month, you are speaking to prospects and you're speaking to clients from a very different place than a place of comfort and a place where you have the money coming in. You don't care if they become a client or not. And I recently, for the first time ever, had to tell someone that I didn't want them on my show anymore because they were going to be a guest. And again, I've already mentioned this to this person too, and it was very difficult for me to do, but they were going to be a guest on my show and I had to reschedule for whatever reason. And their message back was just, it was a very strange message, a message of, well, I was really hoping it would happen this month because my program's coming out and I wanted to talk about my program. I need to fill my program. I only have this many people. I need this many people. And it's like, girl, I don't even want you on my show now to talk about your program and to talk about filling it with clients. Like, you're obviously coming from a place of, if this doesn't work, you're going to be in a bad place. So why did you put yourself in that place? Right? So again, the point is, your goals will change as your life changes. But just if you're coming from a place of disparity, and don't be afraid to ask people, do I sound desperate? Or did I sound desperate when I talked to you about this? Or ask a friend. And this is why having a circle of people who are like-minded, like us, is important. But always be coming from a place of abundance, a place of prosperity, and a place of what we've all been talking about, of integration, which is a beautiful word.
I think that's a great point. Just the idea of being confident, being whole, understanding that whatever that new opportunity is, you don't necessarily need it, but it would be nice to have, right? Kind of, you know, reflecting back to my interview process, same thing. I have a job, plus I have my side work that I do. And so I'm happy, not necessarily fully happy, right? There's more that I would like, but at the same time, you know, if the role didn't work out, it didn't work out. And when you do make that all in leap, it's important. Desperation does a couple things, right? It can motivate you, right? Certain people need to be desperate in order to get things figured out. But at the same time, especially in sales, I don't think it's a powerful place to come from. Right. A lot of times the people that can do the best in sales, that have the best negotiating opportunity, that have the best possibility, are the ones that are willing to walk away from the deal. If you're willing to walk away from the deal, you control the deal. You have power, because the other party, if you've done a good job in selling or they've done a good job in selling you, at the end of the day, whoever's willing to walk away is going to be able to kind of control the dynamic of that relationship. And not to get into weird power type stuff, but at the end of the day, if you want to feel empowered, it's important to have some power, right? And if you're coming from a place where you have no money, where the sale is your ticket to paying your rent this month, that's going to put you in a very different mindset than if your rent's already covered and this is just a little gravy on top.
You know, that's a great point, Andrew, because if you're brave enough to ask for the deal, but brave enough to walk away if it's not a good fit as well, and balanced enough that you know this one interaction, this one moment in time, what's the worst that can happen? The worst that can happen is you're exactly where you were before the conversation. So if you're not balanced, then it's going to feel like it's a burn, but it's really not. You didn't lose anything by walking away from a bad situation. So it sounds like if you're brave and you're balanced, you're going to kick butt in life.
Boom. Love that. In these last few minutes, it might be fun to do a round robin and give, if we had to give one piece of advice or one strategy or one anything, and it was rapid fire, if it came to bravery or balance or integration or any of those things, what would it be? And since you just, you know, went, Ben, how about you? What would be the last final piece of advice that you would give?
I wanted to go because it's simple. Just write down what's the worst that could happen. What's the worst that could happen? And it could be anything from asking someone out at a date. Guess what happens if they say no? You're back to where you were.
You're still single.
Exactly. even if it's forming an LLC and it's a couple hundred dollar investment, what's the worst that could happen? You lose a few hundred dollars. If you can write down what's the worst that can happen, imagine what that terrible circumstance is, and you see it's actually not that bad, go ahead and do it. Because the worst that could happen, you've already defined it, and it's not that bad. So what's the worst that could happen?
And what's the best that could happen, right? Like both of those things. What's the worst? What's the best? The best is going to be way up here. The worst is likely going to be where you are now, or maybe a slightly lesser place. So I really like that, man. Yeah. Good stuff.
I'm too skeptical. I'm too cynical. You're right, though. You're right. You really are.
How about you, Christine?
I would say practice. So to be a, you know, very brave person, you have to just practice, right? Do little things, kind of like atomic habits, right? You start little and you build up from there and it just gets easier over time. And then, you know, with the balance side of things, I would say being intentional. You got to be intentional. You can't just throw things against the wall and be like, well, you know, hopefully it figures out. Hopefully it works, right? Like, have a little bit more intentionality behind it. And what's the worst that could happen, right? Write it down and it's not going to be that bad, right? You're going to always recover from something like that.
Totally. How about you, Andrew?
For me, I want to touch on the balance piece and going back to work-life harmony, things playing together. I think it's important that we understand there's always seasons to things. There's always going to be times of hardship, whether it's in your marriage, whether it's with your kids, whether it's in your job, whether it's in your faith, whether it's your emotional mindset, whatever it is, right? We're going to have seasons of difficulty. I think we talked about it on the last show. I tore my Achilles tendon about 3 months ago now. And it's just been a physical season of difficulty for me. And that's hard, right? I grew up, as an athlete, I'm used to being able to move around, do whatever I want. And I'm still limping and I hate it. But at the same time, it's just the season that I'm in. And so what's important though, is that seasons, we live in upstate New York and seasons here are very nice. We have a winter season, a little bit too long, but it's fine. And we have a spring season. We have a summer season. We have a fall season. Each of them is very distinct. They're all very different. And what's powerful about that is eventually they end. Eventually summertime ends. Eventually fall is here. Eventually fall ends and then it's winter. Eventually winter ends and there is a spring. Right? It does come. Things do thaw out. So as we go out and we make our intentional choices, as we work on our businesses, as we do the side hustle, as we advance in our career, but as we work on building our family, as we try and save for a home, as we try and buy an investment property or whatever the next exciting thing is in your life, understand that you oftentimes have a lot of control in how long a particular season is going to last for. If I'm not doing my physical therapy exercises, my difficult physical season is going to last longer, right? If I'm not intentionally investing in my family, I am going to have a season of hardship or maybe a long, many seasons of hardship when it comes to my family, right? And then same thing with your work. If you're not doing those small little brave moments for a long period of time, you're going to have seasons that are going to feel like a cold winter. And at the same time, as you're working on building a business, you may need to spend less time with family, right? But make it clear that it's a season. Because if it becomes a lifestyle, if your season of sacrifice becomes a lifestyle, there will be a higher price to pay than more than likely than you want to.
Well said. Yeah, I'm going to take it from there and say the same thing. It's also on bravery. And something that really has come in clutch for me, both as an entrepreneur and in working with a company, because you can do this for both, is once you find that something works well, give it to somebody else to run for you. Create systems inside of the business. Since February of last year, I haven't edited a single video. Like, I haven't done any of that. And I haven't added the subtitles to it, anything like that. I haven't done most of the posting also, okay? Like, I create the content parts, I do the writing, but the posting, the editing, and that video creation is all being done by my main man, Errol, who does all my video stuff. And he's a legend. He lives in the Philippines, and I pay him well for over there, but it's not as much of an investment for me here because obviously the currency exchange is very, very different. So find someone who can help you do the things that either you don't like doing or that you're not good at doing so that you can focus on the things that truly bring you joy. Like, rather than edit videos, now I can spend time with my wife, with my future child, with doing these types of things with you guys, right? Why would I want to edit videos if that's not my strong suit, if that's not my superpower? So give away what you're not great at doing. But when I was working in a company, like, I was in charge of creating the trainings for Verizon Wireless of all of upstate New York. And I had the best PowerPoints in the world. The best, the greatest PowerPoint you've ever seen. They were incredible. I feel like Trump when I just said that. They were the best PowerPoints ever. The greatest PowerPoints.
They're the greatest.
They're the greatest. And my boss was like, Brandon, you're great at making PowerPoints. And I was like, you want to know a secret? And he's like, what? And I was like, I haven't created one PowerPoint since I started working here. And he's like, then who is making the PowerPoints? And I was like, someone on Fiverr for $50 has been making every single PowerPoint, and they are legendary. I said, why would I put 5 hours into making this when someone else can do it for $50? So delegate what you're not good at doing. And just like what you said, Andrew, just keep getting better. Every single day, 1% every single day. After a year, you'll be 37% better. After 5 years, astronomical differences. So I think that was a really solid discussion, guys, on bravery, on balance, what it means, how it relates to each of us. Any final thoughts before we wrap this thing up?
I just want to close with this thought, at least for me. Ben, thank you so much for wearing that wig.
It's growing on me, so
literally. I love it. It definitely spiced things up. It was a very fun episode. Round two is eventually in the books. I hope you guys enjoyed the episode. Be sure to share it if you found value from it. And be sure to tune in on the third Thursday of next month, or the third Wednesday of next month, when we go live again.